Rennie, why don't you tell us first off how Forever Never got its start?
How do we start? Well, 2004 was our first show, and we had about a year of build up before that, and we kind of formed out of lots of local bands in the area that did pretty well on their own, and then they all sort of disbanded, and we took the members that we wanted from each band, and that's what our first original lineup was. And obviously now, 10 or 11 years later, the lineup has changed a few times, but we're still going. We're still going strong. So it's it's good. It's a different lineup, but like I say, and the style is obviously changing in that 10 years as well. So
Now your new single One Life comes out tomorrow, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Now I just heard it, and I'm really into it after hearing it for the first time, which with me, normally I've got to hear a song like two or three times before I'm kind of like decide whether I like it or not. What really got me was it's not as metal-y as you would think. It's not as metal as you would think.
No.
You know, it's got, I mean, like what I really loved was the chorus. Like the whole chorus is like one massive hook.
Oh yeah, so it's the money shot, isn't it? That's the
oh yeah, definitely. But it's a continuous like you know 3 minute money shot, which is cool, or 4 minute money shot.
Yeah.
You know, but what I really liked about it, particularly the chorus, was it had that. Not a metal sound to it. The only thing that metal or reminded me of metal was the guitars.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is it. I mean, I'm very, very inspired by sort of vocals from outside of the metal world, really, because I was brought up on Michael Jackson and Terence Trent D'Arby and Stevie Wonder and people like that. So, if I could have got a gospel choir to sing on that chorus, I would have done. And actually, that is one of my aims for further down the line. If we can get a gospel choir to do some live stuff on it, I, that's a bit of a pipe dream for now. But that's the sort of angle I was coming from when I was producing the vocals on that. I was like, oh, I want this to sound just massive, basically, just as big as possible. And like you say, the guitars, we keep the guitars on our stuff heavy as always, but vocally, I think with our new material, just pushing the boundaries a little bit more about, you know, from other inspirations from outside of the rock and the metal world, basically.
Mm-hmm. And well, you know what else I noticed about it too? Like the entire song has a heavy beat to it. Not like, you know, most metalcore bands today. I mean, I love metalcore, and I think it's, you know, it's a great subgenre of the whole metal hard rock scene. But you got to admit, like a lot of them get into, when they get into the actual beat of the song, they're like, okay, let's see where we can get away with double bass and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure. I'll hold my hands up and say, like, you know, we thought our debut album when that came out was revolutionary and everything like that. And I listen to it now and I think it had some good things on it as well. But I think this amount of time on from there, this just the overall songwriting is just another level, to be honest. Like I feel like I've grown up a lot as a songwriter in that time, and I'm not really bothered about whether people think it is metal or it isn't metal. You know, I love the sound of a distorted guitar and a chunky kick drum. You know, I love it. So that's always going to be there. I see where you're coming from.
Completely. Well, and I think I know what you're talking about too. Because see, I'm a guitarist myself, and I started out with, you know, the hard rock icons. Like Eddie Van Halen was what made me want to play guitar.
Yeah, well, and thousands of other people, I'm sure.
Exactly. But, you know, with the roots that I had, every kind of band I was in, no matter what songs we were playing, I always had a habit of making it sound heavier.
Yeah. Yeah, I see. I think again, where we're sort of maybe separating ourselves from, you know, other bands in the metal genre and rock world is just that we love our heavy stuff as well. But if you want your sort of your doom and your gloom and your misery, you know, there's bands for that already, and like they do a great job of that. And we're not going to mess with them. So I think with our new material, it's a lot more upbeat, positive, enthusiastic, just like, you know, more chest beating. But you know, but not in the metalcore sense, but just in like, yeah, you know, you can do better with life. You can. We want to inspire people basically now with what we're the new material we're doing. So that, I think that's where we're going to separate ourselves a little bit from perhaps most of the other bands within the metal genre, so to speak.
Nice. Now, I actually hate classifying bands because
we're
becoming, well, I mean, if you notice, all bands are just becoming more and more diverse, especially in the last 5 years. But yeah. if you had to, I guess actually pigeonhole Forever and Ever into one genre, what would that be?
I think, touching on what I just said, I think we sort of say to each other like posi rock, positive rock or posi metal. Like it is more upbeat. The new stuff that we're doing is. It's that I don't have a lot to moan about in life now. That's another thing, and I just think even performing some of the really old stuff doesn't feel close to home so much anymore. But like, so the newer stuff, we between ourselves at least, whether it gets coined by other people, we'll find out. But like, posi rock or posi metal, like. Just positive, good feelings, good vibes, that sort of thing.
And I think it's really good that you say that too, because I got a positive feeling listening to One Life. I mean, the lyrics are positive. The music has a positive vibe to it. It's got a real heavy backbeat and rhythm to it. Now, do you think, like, and it's good that you brought something up earlier about you don't have anything really negative to write about. Do you think that some bands do that? You know, for, you know, like, I guess for the PR.
I mean, I do have that joke with myself sometimes, just like, you know, you can't be evil all the time.
Yeah.
So I always think about like Ming the Merciless or Skeletor on their time off. They can't, you know, they've got to sit down and eat a sandwich and enjoy it at some point and have like fun stuff going on. And I always think that at the end of the day, when you play in a band, you are putting on a bit. When you go on a stage, it is an act. You're not. I don't think anyone in Slayer comes off the stage and is exactly the same all the time. I mean, like, they have kids and go home to a wife that they love, but they don't write about that sort of stuff because it just would not work in Slayer, would it? Or in Lamb of God or any of those bands. But yeah, I mean, I think that's probably true that they have a lot of good stuff going on in their life, but it just doesn't work in sort of the band that they're doing. But I've brought that through now, I think, with our stuff, and just want to inspire some people, really.
Exactly. Well, like one example I was thinking of when I asked you that was Kurt Cobain. Last song Nirvana actually recorded was a song called I Hate Myself and Want to Die, and he wrote it in his mansion.
Well, yeah, there you go.
You know, I mean, okay, I mean, like, you could buy counseling.
Yeah, yeah, but you can't, you can only be happy in yourself if you are. That's the thing. You can have everything in the world. You can have all like you say, in a mansion. He's not happy. And Nirvana were loved to death by everyone. Like, and it still wasn't enough for him to sort of pull through, which is obviously even sad looking back from it now. But it comes from within. And like, if we can sort of, music helps though as well. That's what I think. Music can really, really heal people if it's done in the right way, and you know, hopefully we can inspire some happiness from our new stuff.
Exactly. Well, and it's good that you bring that up, because since we've been talking here, it's actually made me kind of want to ask you like a really off question, being how positive you guys actually are about music in general.
Yeah,
would you be opposed if it was possible to play a show in Paris, given what's happened?
I would do it. I did a video post on Facebook a few days ago when it happened, and I'm not a pacifist. I can't sort of be, you know, a hypocrite about that. I mean, sometimes I think you have to force things on. But like what I said there was you can't let people win the you know, careful to say terrorists, but I just mean anyone in general. If people stop you doing what you love, especially when it's music, I think that's why it really hit home, this one, because it felt more. Some people will say, point fingers and say, well, you only said that because it was nearer to home. It's like France. It's like next to us, isn't it? So it's not. Actually, the reason it hit home with me the most was because they went to a music concert like what we play at. And I associate with the sort of people that were there, music lovers. And, you know, whenever you go to a gig, you're surrounded by everyone who share a common thread, which is basically love. And they, you know, they're there because they love music, they love the band that's playing, and they went into a room filled with love and shut it down. And that to me was like, well, if they're going to do that, don't let it stop you, like put you off going to gigs because you think it might happen again. You know, planes, the underground in London, the train in Madrid happened, all of these things that they whoever they are put bombs on, and we're still going out and using them. You've got to show some defiance, and you've got to just get on with your lives, because they're not going to go away, these people. They're going to be around for a little while, and I think we have to learn to sort of live with it, really. And if you stop doing the things that you love because of them, then you let them win. And you know, for me, yeah, if we had an opportunity to go to Paris and play, we'd go and play. I would.
Yeah, and well, and I mean, let us not forget, you know, what happened in New York on September 11th. Oh, yeah. And that short, and that, I mean, and that town didn't even shut down.
No, that was the best act of defiance you can see. They just got about their business. Everyone's done it, and everyone should be really proud of their local areas for just, you know, getting back to work and doing it, because if you fold, then they get exactly what they want. And the other thing I want to say about that while I'm on it, excuse me, you know, I think the other thing that comes out of this and that I see on, you know, on social media and stuff like that is there's a lot of hate that comes out of it. And I know the natural reaction when this stuff happens is to sort of want to hate someone, but I don't think anyone really knows who you're hating with these things. And it's really misguided, really, you know, there's a lot of propaganda that comes up, and you think, you know, people are sort of, you suddenly find out a few people are like casually racist and stuff like that, and you think, well, that's not, and it's not their fault a lot of the time, because I think it's forced on them by, you know, media and the way they want to portray these things. And it's really, really precarious, I think. Like, and you know, these people that have blown themselves up, if they're looking down afterwards, they're going to be thinking, great, we've not only have we, you know, killed some people at the same time, everyone's bickering amongst themselves about stuff. And so I'm a bit of a believer in, out of these things, you just have to love more. Don't, hate is a waste of your own breath anyway. Everyone knows that, because the people you hate don't really care.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the only one that's actually getting up. So that I implore people to just, you know, love the people that you know are good people extra, more. Just spread love around more. And that's might sound wishy-washy to some people. Some people would say, well, no, just pick up a gun and shoot them back. And I'm like, well, I think hate leads to more hate, and it doesn't stop. So,
mm-hmm. You know. Well, and you're dead on, actually, because I think part of the reason for what you're talking about with the hate is that people look for somebody or something to blame right away, so that they can you know, aim their anger at that. And like I remember, like here in the U.S. when 9/11 happened, immediately there were like reprisal attacks against Muslims in you know, here in town. And what people didn't realize, me personally, I know a few Muslims that are like a couple of my best friends, and they were just as upset as I was.
Of course. Then, I mean, I did also write a status the other day, which basically said a similar thing without naming names. It's just a case of, I don't see the people that do these things any differently as the crazy people that, you know, like go into schools and shoot up people in the schools. To me, they're all bona fide A-grade mental people with a doctor's note to go with it. Like they are all equally as crazy as each other. But the only difference is between, you know, the kids that go into the schools and do this, do that sort of thing, and these, is that these, you know, ham it up with an agenda of religion and whatever else. And it, but we know, if like your friends you spoke about, if they are legitimate Muslims, then they condemn it as well. They don't agree with what's going on. Any normal human of any race does not agree with what is going on in the world. They can't.
Precisely.
And so that's why I think it's dangerous to point fingers at, you know, entire races of people or religions and stuff like that, because you can't tar everyone with the same brush. It's just not, you can't.
Exactly. Well, going back to the Paris thing, I'm glad to hear that Forever Never would play there.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, otherwise you're depriving that, I mean, what, is no one ever going to play Paris again and deprive them of live music? Because I wouldn't like that if it was London and all of a sudden they said, oh, no more gigs in London. That would upset me a lot. And how many people live for music? So many people, music is their release, it's their life. Whether you're in a band or whether you're not, I mean, all you have to do is go to gigs and see the joy on people's faces. And you know that would be a great loss to Paris. But it takes other bands to say, nah, we're going to go and play regardless. You just got to do it.
Well, and London's part of that exclusive club as well that has been a victim of terrorist attacks. You know, like New York, Washington, D.C., London, Paris, Madrid. I mean, the list is getting bigger. And it's going to happen again and again and again. But I want to get your opinion on something I read online this morning about Paris. That's actually why I asked you that, because, you know, London is close to Paris, and Forever and Ever has been in that area before. There are two bands, two Irish bands actually. I'll name them here in a second. One, both had gigs in Paris this week. They're both fairly legendary. One kept their gig and then used it to unite the people at the gig. The other band canceled their show, and the band that kept the gig, or the Irish band that kept the gig, is Stiff Little Fingers, and the band that canceled their show is U2.
Yeah, well, I don't want to point fingers at anyone, because obviously it's each to their own decision. There's a lot of factors that go into whether you pull a gig or not, obviously. Now, I'd imagine that obviously with U2, it's obviously a massive, huge stadium that they're talking about.
Yeah, it was I think the Ergo or Ergo Dome or something. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah,
it was a dome.
I mean, for them, you know, on a sheer level of, if the terrorism, the terrorists were looking at it and thinking, well, we're going to, they would pick something like that where there's massive amounts of people. So I'm not saying that they were right to cancel or wrong to cancel, but I can see why they did, because it's just such a massive, huge event. But it doesn't surprise me that Stiff Little Fingers did play.
Well, and also the U2 concert, it was, like I said, it was going to be in an outdoor arena. It was 50,000 capacity, and it was sold out, and it was also going to be simulcast on HBO.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a big one.
That's a massive target.
Yeah, that is. It all comes down. I would hope that they would still be thinking of, you know, rescheduling it for, you know, soon, rather than sort of letting it die down for a long time. I think just get it done while you need music unites people. That's what I think the saddest thing about what happened in Paris is, music is a there's such a unity at gigs, it's could be used in such a positive thing to bring everyone together. That's a controversial one, really, in terms of whether they should have cancelled it or not. That was split opinion, I think.
Exactly. So, well, let's get back to the music.
Yeah, sure.
The new single comes out tomorrow. How was the writing process for that? Because, like I said, I mean, it is a gorgeous song.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, it was actually inspired by the London riots, which was about 4 years ago. I don't know if you're familiar with what happened there, but there it was 2 or 3 days worth of riots in London, and young people were causing, well, just smashing things up, stealing things, and it wasn't nice to see. And I started writing that song then, and I'll admit, at first, the lyrics were sort of aimed at people. It was a bit more sort of pointing fingers. But over time, it sort of changed and it became the sort of more enthusiastic, you know, putting your arm around someone as opposed to pointing at them, you know what I mean? Just like, and it came out from there. And then obviously the chorus came together and it just turned into this, yeah, monstrous, positive sounding entity that it's become. So it's good. I mean, that's an example of sort of my initial aggression and anger at the situation channeled into something a lot more positive. You can always do that.
Yeah, I mean, you can feel the positiveness of the music with One Life. I mean, it's just brilliantly pieced together. And now that I've heard the backstory about it, it makes me love it even more.
Yeah, cool.
So yeah. Now are you gonna come out with an EP or a full album?
Yeah. Obviously, since our last original release, it was 2009. So I've had 6 years to put some stuff together, and we have got plenty. We could do an album, but we're going to do an EP first. So we're going to, I think, hit the studio December or January, and then get these six songs together, and that'll be coming out first, and then we'll look to doing an album at the end of next year, so the start of the year after, maybe, depending on how much touring we get to do next year.
That actually brings up something I was wanting to ask too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you guys did take a hiatus, you know, right around 2009, and are just coming back. Why the break?
Well, we took the we did our last run of shows in 2012, and I think we just got to a point where it's a shame, because looking back, you sort of think you took things for granted a little bit. I know I certainly did. And then we just needed a break, I think. But we didn't need to call it a hiatus. I think we could have just said amongst ourselves, let's just take 6 months off. But I think we felt like we'd sort of reached a ceiling, really. When maybe we thought, this is just taking up too much of our thoughts and emotions. So we stopped, and then after 9 months, I was thinking, oh, I immediately regret this decision.
Well, yeah. It's a balancing act, because, I mean, you know, I've been in bands myself, and there's just times where it just seems like it's grinding at that point.
Oh, it is. It's a shame when it gets to that point, but I think if anything, the best thing that's come out of the break is, it's a cliche, but you don't know what you've got till it's gone. That's definitely true, and the other one is the grass is always greener, and you know what I've come to realise is that no matter how things might be getting you down, or you might be sort of annoyed about stuff, it's good to be annoyed about stuff and things getting you down, and have music as opposed to having those things and not doing music. So I will not be taking any more breaks. That is for sure, personally. And the other guys would agree with me on that too. So, yeah.
Now, was it one of those things where you guys literally didn't see each other for a couple of years?
No, we did sort of all see each other every now and then, because we didn't fall out. We didn't have there was no big argument or whatever. We just sort of come to a natural conclusion. We did our last rehearsals, and then we did our last gigs, and we were like, it was nice, but actually it was bittersweet, because the shows were really good as well, so it was a bit like, oh, why are we stopping? I saw different members at different times, and it took me, like I say, about 9 months, because I did some solo stuff, some solo material, and I collaborated with some DJs and some rappers, and I was enjoying myself doing some other bits, but I wasn't performing live. So recording was still cool, but and then after about a year, I was out with Frank, our guitarist, because we were seeing each other a lot and going out on nights out and stuff. And I just sort of said, oh, I'd love to be playing some gigs again. He went, well, yeah, obviously. So I was like, you'd be up for it? He was like, yeah. And then I ended up going around everyone in my own little sneaky little way and sort of just dropped it into conversation, said, oh, well, I'd be up for doing it. And I was like, oh, yeah, so would I. So then from that point, it then took another 9 months to actually get us in a rehearsal room. But, you know, we ended up getting everyone out on the same night for a meal, went for some food, very civilized for a metal band. Yeah.
So you and Frank went the Blues Brothers route and like just went around and we're getting the band back together.
And then it's, you know, no looking back ever since then. That it's been great.
Nice. Well, I'm really glad you guys are back together. And I think, you know, maybe you guys needed a break to recharge the batteries and get creative with each other again.
I think so. Yeah. We think to ourselves a little bit like, oh, what if we'd have just, because we are doing it again now, we think, oh, if we'd have plowed on, we'd have done that many more tours. We'd have got that many more albums out, we'd have had that many more fans come through. But then on the other hand, we wouldn't have been creating the music as good as we are now, because you kind of need inspiration. And I think I've had a lot of that over the last 3 years that in the 3 years that we had a break. I think I learned a lot from, you know, the other genres that I was working on and stuff like that, and it all goes into the melting pot and you come out with something hopefully fresh.
Exactly. And that's the only way you can do it, because I think fans are quick to notice when bands are phoning it in.
Yes, definitely.
You know. So, now let's talk about your tour. You're going out with the Defiled and Vampires Everywhere in January, man. What, are you guys ready for that? Cuz that sounds like a party and a half there.
Yeah, that's going to be a good tour. We've played with the Defiled guys before. And over the years, in fact, one of our earliest gigs we did was with those guys at the Underworld in Camden. And they've asked us to do the tour with them, and we're delighted. So it's going to be, I think it's 8-9 shows, and it's not the major cities, but But I kind of like these tours when it's not the major cities, because you get to see some people that perhaps can't make it out to the Londons and the Birminghams and Manchesters and stuff. So it's good.
Nice. Now, What can we expect from the shows when you guys are back? I mean, are you guys gonna mix it up and give us all some surprises or something? Like, you know, well, I don't know.
We did our last show of the year on Tuesday in Camden at the Barfly, which is one of my favourite venues, and we just did a whole mixture there of old and new. I think by a rule of thumb, I guess if we're headlining, you're going to get a spread of all of our stuff, but what we're really excited about is all of our new material. So if we're going out on supports like this Defiled tour, I think we're gonna feature quite heavily with them with the new stuff, because, you know, we're playing to a room that doesn't know our old stuff either a lot of the time. If you're playing to other people's fan bases, you want them to sort of get on board with what you're doing now, as opposed to what you were doing 9 or 10 years ago. So yeah, I think live we've got loads of cool ideas to sort of make the show a bit more of a spectacle, and hopefully people will enjoy it.
Now, how do you do that with this is basically like a triple headlining tour, because you guys are all, you know, like almost, you know, pretty much on equal footing, all three acts. So like, does it get nervous when it's like when you play with two other bands of the same caliber? Do you feel you have to amp it up or anything? Or?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't mind saying that about us guys. It's always a friendly rivalry for us when it's with bands that we like and we respect, because you want people to be leaving there at the very least saying, cool, and any of those three bands could have headlined, you know, or preferably, we thought Forever and Ever were the best on the night. That's what we want people to go out there saying. But it's you just put on the best show you know you can, and as long as you come off stage you know, all happy with what you've done, then it's up to the people to decide whether they've enjoyed it enough to come and see you again, you know, when we're doing a headline run or whatever. So
mm-hmm. Well, you could, you know what you could do to amp it up, you know, play a couple of their songs.
Stitch someone up, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, we're just gonna do a couple of covers here.
Yeah, that'd really throw a wrench in everything. You know,
especially if you did it better.
Yeah, exactly. Like did like a totally different version of it that's like better than the original and stuff, man.
Well, we don't mind a cover either. We've done quite a few covers in the past, so if the Defile guys are listening, don't worry, we're not going to do it on that tour.
Yeah, it would definitely be, you know, like crowd intrigue. you know, so after the tour, what do you guys have coming up after that? I mean, because are you going to come out with a new single like the to top One Life?
Yeah, we're going to do. Obviously, we're going to get the EP recorded, and then we haven't decided on the what's going to be the sort of the lead single from the EP. So, but we'll do a video for that single. I would have thought in early part of next year. And once the tour's over, it's basically for us a chance to just tour as much as possible. So we've got a couple of tours that we are, further down the line we've talks about. So we would be hoping that they'll come off. But we obviously, you don't count your chickens before they hatch. So I can't really say yet, but we'll see.
Well, it sounds like you guys are like, you know, like on the road to some massive stuff here. And the cool thing is too, with Forever Never, it's not like, it doesn't feel like you guys really went away.
No, do you know what? That has actually been the coolest thing that's happened since come back. It actually, in a way, feels like we've just not even picked up from where we left off. It actually genuinely feels like there's more of a buzz about the band than there was before. I do think that's partly down to the strength of the two new songs that we've released. But also, I don't know, it's like I'm seeing our material getting shared by people online that I was pretty sure didn't like us before. So it's like, you know, I think we're turning some people around as well that have had an opinion on us, correctly or incorrectly, like from before, and they're hearing this new stuff. And they're, you know, when someone shares your stuff, I think that's the coolest thing that someone can do, because that's them putting their name to your band and saying, I think these are cool. I think these are good. Whereas maybe 6 or 7 years ago, some people didn't want to do that for whatever reason, but it certainly feels like there's more of a buzz going around now, which is great.
Yeah. Well, I remember first hearing you guys back in like 2006, 2007 with Aporia.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, and I'm like, part of me is like actually thinking, holy shit, I'm like talking to Lenny Carroll right now. So you should have actually heard me yesterday when the power came on, and I saw that I missed your call. I was like, oh my god, you know. Serious, I was like so upset that that happened. I was, you know, you have no idea.
We sorted it out in the end.
It's yeah, cool. Yeah, exactly. But you know what's even cooler too? I mean, you know, you're in a band of that caliber, and you seem like an ordinary guy.
The only time I don't like being an ordinary guy is when I'm on stage, and that's when I'm a different person to a degree. But I just think, you know, there's no need to be. I don't, we're real close to our fan base, because we respect the fact that without them, there is no us. Every band in the world should really, it's a bit of a cliche, but every band in the world should respect that. You know, whatever part of the, whatever end of the scale you're on, if you're Metallica and you've got millions and millions of fans, you've still got to respect that if they all suddenly drop out on you, you're nothing again. There's nothing you can do about that. If they all suddenly decide to go, nah, thanks, then you're nothing. And it's same deal if you're a band just starting out and you've got 10 fans that comes follow you everywhere, you've got to respect the fact that they're giving you the buzz of being on a stage and having people actually see you. It's cool. We're like that with everyone, and I'm just bit of an idiot most of the time.
Well, but it's cool though, and I think it shows in your music, because some bands, and I hate to say it, like Metallica, have kind of crossed over into the, you know, we're rock gods and we know it. You know?
Yeah, I think, and I mean, they've been around a long time, and I absolutely have absolute respect for Metallica as well. But I think you're right. That's why sometimes they just come out with these crazy ideas, and you think, why have you done that? Just stick to what you're already good at. You know, like I think it's because they're getting to an age where they feel like they need to sort of step it up, and everyone else is going, no, don't step it up. Just stay where you are.
Yeah, exactly. I don't need a ride cymbal.
Exactly.
I think your drummer Sam would get that joke real easy.
Yeah, he would. Sam is a phenomenal drummer, actually.
So, no, I mean, I think he would get that, because Lars actually like said that. He's like, you know, he doesn't need a ride cymbal. He doesn't have one anymore.
He said that, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. He doesn't have a. You know, he's like the only drummer I know that doesn't do that. So it's just insane, man. So, well, where can we find Forever Never online?
Well, you've got forevernever.com. You've got on Facebook, it's /forevernever. Twitter, you can catch us on there. It's forever_never. And then Instagram is forevernever_official. Annoyingly, the last two are taken up by just one Canadian girl and one American girl, and they don't use it. So I always say it, and whenever anyone asks for our details, I always say it just in case. Like, but if you're one of those two girls and you're listening to this, just let us have it back. Just let us have it. You're not using it.
Yeah. You know what, though? It might just take sending them a T-shirt or something.
I know. Yeah, we have tried to get in touch with them before, but yeah, you know, that's why it takes me extra long to sort of go through them all. It could save me so much breath just to say it's just Forever and Ever on all of them. But yeah, no, it's not. And if you're interested in myself, it's RennieFN on that Twitter. So yeah, if you want to get in touch personally, yeah, RennieFN.
Nice. Well, thanks, Rennie, for doing the interview today, man. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure, Gemma.